I am now recording. Forgot about that. Here's something else I wanted to say. If you are not in a small group, please find one. If there's not one near you, get together with some other people and form one. There's nothing there's nothing like that small group to match this kind of companionship that Hopeful and Christian have. That's where the accountability comes in. That's where the fellowship and building each other up in the Lord comes from. I'm sure it could come from a church, particularly a smaller church like this, but the smaller you get, the more personal things become. Here they're so personal, it's two people, two by two, walking together. And in a small group, you get much closer to that than in the whole church together. So, okay, that's the end of that commercial. Now, Byens joins the Pilgrims. Based on his own testimony, why might he be called Byens, or what does Byens mean? Basically what I'm saying. Everybody read it this week, right?
People
except for Dave.
People can't abide me.
People can't abide you?
Yes.
Okay.
I took it right out of the book.
All right. Another way I've heard this described at is side ends. He has a different, his, you know how there's a means to an ends? He has a side end. He has two things that he wants to achieve. He wants to get to heaven, but he also wants what? What does this guy want?
People to like him.
People to like him? Yes, he definitely does want people to like him. He wants what?
The comforts of life.
Oh, yes. This guy loves the comforts of life. Where does he come from? Do you remember that? I don't remember that, so it's okay. Fair Speech, town of Fair Speech. Oh, he wants people to like him. That's true.
Prosperity gospel.
Absolutely. He's preaching the prosperity gospel. He has ulterior motives for his religion. He likes religion, he calls it, in silver slippers. He does not like religion in its rags. That's definitely where we're talking about the prosperity type of gospel. So what did Christian and Hopeful think of this guy? He didn't like to give his name, did he? He didn't want to give his name. He never actually admitted to his name, Byens. He only said that, that's something people call me, but it's really not true. I'm not like that. I don't have ulterior. I'm all for the Lord. And when God blesses me, praise God. So you can see the conflict that he has. He's being pulled both ways, and he's this double-minded man that doesn't have a problem with that.
He really kind of they kind of lay into him right from the get-go, you know.
That's right.
Christian does point. Hey, you're really in Byens, right?
Who, me? No,
yeah.
That's not my name.
He just kind of says it out, you know, like it is.
Sure.
To Byens.
Oh, well, look what he's wanting. He's wanting fellowship. He's wanting this close fellowship with Christian and Hopeful. Christian and Hopeful have entered into this brotherly covenant. They've covenanted with each other. They've gone through the fire. They lived through Vanity Fair together. Maybe not in the same place, but they both went through it. Hopeful, who had stayed there much longer than Christian, and Christian through the fire. So they had a lot in common, and were able to use that common grounds as a basis for the beginning of their relationship. And then Byen says, "Hey, let's join together." And Christian is questioning that and trying to figure out who this guy is. You don't want to form a covenant or a that close a relationship with someone who is not headed in the same place you are. So, eventually, Byans is more or less rejected by Christian and Hopeful. And he falls back and he joins his own companions. Who were his companions?
Hold the world, money, love,
save all. Hold the world. That's pretty self-explanatory. Money, love, that is. What would save all? That could sound like, that almost sounds like something good. It's exactly that. This is Ebenezer Scrooge. Save all. And who was their teacher? You remember?
He's a great man.
What does grip?
Grip or grip?
It's probably grip.
Grip man?
Yeah. It's maybe the old English way of spelling grip. G-R-I-P-P-E. Although this is G-R-I-P-E spelled here. You know, that old English, no standard spelling of things. But what would Mr. Gripman have taught them?
He taught them the art of getting, either by violence, cozenage, flattery, lying, or by putting on the guise of religion.
They learned their lesson well, didn't they?
Get what you want.
Right. Through religion as well. So these guys sound like they belong together. Buy ends, hold the world, money, love, and save all. They're very close friends. How does Byans describe the pilgrims that are ahead of him?
Narrow-minded.
Yeah.
Not budging.
If you don't jump the way they want you to jump, then they push you off. Those narrow-minded Christians. There's narrow-minded fundamentalists. There's narrow-minded, supply your own derogatory religious term. So then Byan asks his companions a question. He said, and that they're walking down the road, it's a long trip, and so they don't have a radio. They don't have a little DVD player for the back seat of their sitting on the back of Save All so that other people can watch. So they entertain themselves by talking. What a concept. Byans asked this question. He says, so is it wrong for someone to become more zealous for God? Is it wrong for them to gain monetarily by that? Is it wrong for that to be a motive for becoming more zealous? And if there's an opportunity for profit, either by clergy or by laymen, money love answers in the affirmative. No, there's nothing wrong. He says that's a positive thing. There's no problem with that. What are some of the reasons that he gives that it's okay for someone to gain financially by appearing to become more zealous?
We quote those members of the Old Testament, especially, who had money, who were wealthy and were religious and spiritual men.
Mm-hmm.
His desire of greater benefits is lawful. This cannot be contradicted.
Because it's provided by
God himself.
Ooh, providence. He's invoking providence. Providence has brought this opportunity for me. This must be from God, so I must take it. We're talking, and these are the answers for the clergyman. For a clergyman to become more zealous means what? He's going to do? He's going to have to do something. Not just talk more. He might have to learn something new. He might have to go deeper into knowledge, down the road of knowledge. And gaining more knowledge, that's probably a pretty good thing too. And also, if you're going to change something about what you believe, maybe you're going to a comment, you're going to a different congregation and they don't believe exactly the same thing you want, but it's a great opportunity fiscally. You're going to get a, say, a 30% raise if you take this opportunity. But you might have to compromise on what you believe is right. So what? You're actually becoming, you're denying yourself when you do that. You're saying, I'm not so important. The people who I'm going to be working with, they're more important. I'm going to hold back on what I believe to be the truth to serve them more. And if I get a 30% raise out of that, well, so be it. And the other reason would be that he's pursuing a call of God in this case. What about in the case of the layman? The layman has an opportunity in this case, say, to marry up in the world. You can find a rich wife, but that family is pretty religious. Is it okay to become more zealous? To gain that trophy wife? Trophy in this case, your trophy is a lot of treasure on earth. What are some reasons that money love gives that that's okay?
Because I become more religious.
Right, you're going to be... I'm going to become religious. I wasn't very religious before. That's a good thing, isn't it? Becoming religious?
Once again, it's not unlawful to get a rich wife or...
Right. There's no law against that. Something that I found interesting is how he kept, how Money Love keeps saying, this is good, this is good, this is good. It's good to do this, it's good to get a good wife, good this. What does the word good mean here?
Self-good, maybe.
Self-good.
Good for the self, and it's good for me.
Profitable. It's, the world would describe the word good a little differently than we might. I think so. They would describe the word good as meaning useful. It's useful to gain riches. It's useful to get a wife who will bring you up in the world. So on the next page, then hold the world. It's not buy-ins that comes back and once they had this little discussion, they say, well, let's go back and talk with Christian about this. What they say, let's have hold the world ask these questions of Christian and Hopeful, because, you know, buy-ins might be a little bit hot-blooded right now by being rejected by him. So hold the world questions them, and how does Christian respond to these four or different ways that that it would be good to get money?
For if it be lawful, unlawful to follow Christ for loaves as it is, how much more is it abominable to make of him and religion a stalking horse to get into a war?
What is a stalking horse?
You have a means whereby.
Right. I read some commentary that said that in hunting, it would be useful when you're hunting game, you know, by yourself, to get behind a horse, another animal. The horse is not going to spook the deer, so you hide behind that to get what you really want. So Christian says that there are basically four types of people who would go for this kind of logic. You remember what they were and what the examples were of these people? One was the heathen. Who was the heathen that tried this method? And he reaches back for, into the Old Testament.
Hey, Moore and Shechem.
Yep. Hamor and Shechem. What happened to? What did they want to do? Who did they? They wanted to marry up, right? That was the exact example. They wanted to marry into Jacob's family. Wanted to marry Dinah, was it? And so they thought, well, you know, if we have to be circumcised, we'll be circumcised. It was okay to be circumcised in the flesh. They were not necessarily looking for circumcision in the heart. They were saying, their flocks and their fields will be ours too. We'll put them together and we'll have twice as much. Hypocrites. What was the example of the hypocrites?
Pharisees.
The Pharisees. The Pharisees who put on such a show of religion, but they were really after what?
Favor of men,
the widow's lands, the widow's inheritance. I will marry you because you need to be married, you rich widow, you. Devils. Who was the devil that Christian was talking about in this case?
Judas.
Sold Jesus for 30 pounds of silver, dipped into the, he was the treasurer, and he would, it was implied that he dipped into the treasury of the disciples. And witches, who is the example of the witches that he gives?
Simon
the sorcerer, yeah. Right. Was he talking to Peter, I believe, and said, hey, lay hands on me. I want this spirit because I can make a killing. And overall, against the argument that it's good to become religious, what happens when these people find it, after they do become religious, they find it easy to, if it becomes inconvenient, they tend to continue on the way. They'll easily cast religion aside. Okay, and after they are left dumbstruck, they stagger at Christian's response. They slow down and let the other guys go ahead. They approach the silver mine and the hill Lucre. What does lucre mean? If some of the younger folks may not be very familiar with the King James Version, but right, riches, filthy riches. You always, whenever you see the word lucre in the King James Version of the Bible, it's always written filthy lucre. So it talks about ill-gotten gains or wrongly longing for riches. What do you think the silver mine represents then? It should be easy.
Money.
I'm sorry?
Thorns.
Thorns? What do you mean by thorns? The silver mine represents.
Cast the seed among the thorns and they grow up. Choke it out.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So are you meaning the cares of the world? Choking out the...
Right.
Sure. Withdrawal of riches.
Sure. Yeah.
But that is just a variation on Vanity Fair.
It is. Yeah, that's the next question. This is very... there's definitely a pattern here. Is it any different today? I think we have the same problem that John Bunyan is trying to emphasize here. Don't love the world. Don't love the world. Don't love the world and its riches.
I wonder if this is a little more focused. It is very similar, but I wonder if this example is meant to be a little more focused on the the wealth itself rather than the things go along, you know, the broader things go along with wealth, fame, fortune, you know, that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But just the wealth, that, you know, just right. The wealth itself.
Okay.
The fact that the money is off of the path, though, does indicate that it is a distraction.
Mm-hmm.
The pursuit of it itself, when it leads you off the path, is a no-no.
Right, this could almost be worse because Vanity Fair was actually built around the narrow way. The silver mine is off the path. You actually have to go off the path and onto the hill to get to the silver mine. It's not like it's right there, step in, you'd be considered, well, I'm sort of on the way right now still. You actually have to step off the path to get to the mine. Demas. Who is Demas in the Bible? What's he doing here? Would someone look in 2 Timothy 4:10 and read that for me?
Is he the one that abandoned Paul?
Yes, he is. He abandoned the love. Yep. He loved this present world too much. What? Someone would read that.
For Demas, in love with this present world, has deserted me and gone to Thessalonica.
So Demas was an actual companion of Paul. Why do you think he's here? Why is he the barker? Do you guys understand what I mean when I say he's the barker for the mine?
Come on.
Exactly. Right. Back in old circus sideshows, they wouldn't just have the sideshow there. They would have someone out front selling tickets to the sideshow or getting the crowd riled up as they come by. Come on in. See the gorilla boy or whatever. Come on in. See this mine. See the treasures. And Christian... here. Are they tempted to lead the way? Christian, the hopeful?
Hopeful is.
Hopeful is, right. Hopeful says, let's go see. This might be a good thing. And Christian holds him back, though, doesn't he? Is that another good reason to be involved closely with someone else in your life? Notice neither of them are with their wives. We don't even know if Hopeful is married, but they're not counting their wives as that companion along the way, or at least Bunyan isn't at this point. That doesn't mean they can't be, but go ahead.
But the question that would come up and be begged is, do you seek an accountability partner that has different struggles?
Hmm. Sure. Yeah, I think that's exactly what you need in your life. You don't need a cheerleader so much as someone who, again, as Dave put it so well, will keep you straight. It's easier for someone who doesn't have the same struggles as you to keep you accountable rather than someone, say, you're both struggling with an addiction to gambling. Those two guys should not go on a trip, an exploratory trip to Las Vegas together. See what I mean?
Let me take exception. Alcoholics Anonymous are a group of former alcoholics that are supporting each other.
Okay.
Maybe that's an exception.
But that is a large group with much greater emphasis on accountability than perhaps even the church has today. Maybe it shouldn't be that way, though. But we don't want to offend, do we?
You know, I think it's a good, just the thought came through my mind that they realize their condition, that they have a real problem, and so many times Christians don't recognize that they have a problem. Mm. They're yep. truly sinners in God's eyes, and they need all the help they can get.
Okay, so if you... Chances are, if you've joined a support group like that, then you have recognized that you do have issues. And they're not being hidden or attempted to be... you're not just working with one person in that case. So Christian refuses the offer of Demas. Who does Christian identify as Demas's relatives?
Your husband, Judas.
Judas was your father. And who's Gehazi? Who's Gehazi?
Elisha's assistant.
Elisha's assistant. What did he do?
Followed Naaman.
Right. Elisha had told Naaman what to do to heal himself from leprosy. He went and dipped in the Jordan 7 times. And comes back to pay Elisha. Elisha says, no, I don't want your money. Go on your way. And what does Gehazi do? He takes off after Naaman, stops him and says, he changed his mind. He was looking for riches. Okay. What happens to Baez and his friends when they come by the silver mine? Do they have a big deliberation? Of course they're going to go in and never be seen from again. But do they have a big deliberation beforehand and say, should we or shouldn't we? I don't know. The path goes this way, silver mine's this way.
Yeah, no question, silver mine.
Yeah, immediately they left the way. Okay, the next question, Lot's wife. What's written in the stone? An easy one. What's written in the stone of this monument, this pillar of salt?
Remember Lot's wife.
Remember Lot's wife. What does this mean at this point in the story? Sort of goes along with what Renee was saying a few minutes ago. We're on the same strain. We're still pounding into these guys. Don't love the world. And going on to the next page, what do you think Hopeful is thinking here? They have a little conversation about this monument. And Hopeful's actually pretty amazed.
Yeah, Hopeful kind of says, that could have been me.
Absolutely.
Yeah. He says, what's the difference between her sin and mine? She only looked back, and I had a desire to go see. Yeah, he was on his way. He was going to try to do more than his look.
Another thing he says is, above all, I ponder one particular thing. And that is how Demas and his friends can so confidently stand over there looking for treasure while this woman merely looked behind her. For we did not read that she stepped so much as one step out of the way. Nevertheless, she was turned into a pillar of salt. And the judgment which overtook her remains an example. And within sight of those rummaging in the mine. For if they were to simply lift up their eyes, they could not miss seeing her. This example was left in the Bible for us. And it shows not necessarily what she did so much as what was in her heart. Her heart, yeah, she did turn and look back. Her feet didn't leave the way, and she was still judged by God. Moving on, because we have a lot to cover. They are refreshed by the river of God. We're beginning to see a cycle repeat itself once again. Rest precedes trial. What do you think Bunyan might be saying with this rest before Bypass Meadow. There seems like Christian always gets into trouble, and Faithful too did. Right when they were at a point where they should be refreshed and rested, they come off with this great string of successes in fighting off the world.
Get lax.
Go ahead, Richard.
Be watching.
Mm-hmm.
Not only that, it's apparent that the struggle gets Christian down. When he stopped at the rest back before going up the hill towards the beginning of the book, he fell asleep when it was just supposed to be a rest stop. So he was really weighed down by all this and dropped off.
Yeah, that seems to be Christian's struggle. He struggles with, I think he, and despair really is his real thorn in his side here. Bypath Meadow, what's so wrong with the straight and narrow path that they feel that they have to go over the stile? Everyone knows what a stile is and a fence line. Mm-hmm. It's usually, or in wooden fences, as I've seen, it's just a set of wooden stairs over that the livestock can't get over, but humans can pretty easily. And it's meant so that people can go over easily. What's wrong with the way at this point? The way's straight, the way's narrow. It's not as comfortable. It's lots of rocks. Has anybody ever been on the Appalachian Trail between, say, I think it's Route 55 and the West Virginia border? You're walking a ridge line, and there's lots of rocks. It is really hard on your ankles if you're not used to that kind of thing. I remember walking it with Kim when, I think she was pregnant with Ben, was it? And she was doing so much better than me, but man, my ankles were just killing me from walking on those rocks. And that's what I think of when I think of this straight and narrow path. It was straight. It was narrow. It was relatively flat. But man, I was waiting for some uphill or downhill on some nice dirt. And to see next to them this beautiful green field. Lush green grass. It's a meadow. That's why nurseries often have meadow in their name. Because it's something that we desire. It evokes nice feelings in us, the thought of a meadow. But this is not, meadows can belong to different people. We were actually looking at land yesterday, Kim and I, and we were walking through this nice field, and we thought, oh, this looks really nice. And we got lost, and we started talking to one of their neighbors, we showed them the plat and said, where are we? And who owns this plot of land? And they said, oh, that belongs to blah, blah, blah. And I said, oh, well, maybe we should go. No, you don't want to go talk to them. They're a little woo-hoo. So the land might be nice, but you don't know who owns it. And who owns it in this case?
Giant despair.
The giant despair. Pilgrims had performed very well recently, like we said, from leaving Vanity Fair to the Monument of Lot's Wife. Why did they stumble now? And why didn't Christian listen to Hopeful's warning not to go out of the way? Who's Christian in this relationship, in this...
stronger, been a Christian longer, knows more.
He's the elder of the relationship. So what do you think Bunyan is saying here? Those of us who are strong in the faith, you need to watch out too. Okay. What is Doubting Castle? What does that mean? What does doubting here mean? Does it mean... I think for years I've read this and thought doubting meant doubting that God exists. But I don't think that's, after reading it more closely and studying it more, I don't think that's what Bunyan is saying here. What does he mean when he calls this doubting castle? And it has to do with despair. It does.
Doubting our own salvation.
Doubting your salvation. Doubting that God can be graceful enough to forgive you for what you have done. That's exactly what I think that's what he means here. And his wife, what's his wife's name?
Diffidence.
What's the significance of that? What does diffidence mean? I mean, sometimes you think of diffidence and that sounds like an admirable quality. But in this case, it's definitely not. For those of us who were raised to be meek, good boys, diffidence was, you know, considered to be a nice thing. What is diffidence in relation to despair in this case? How are they a good match for each other? How I put it in the question. What does diffidence mean in this case? Could it possibly mean that we shouldn't have the boldness to come to God with our sin and say, you said you would forgive me, but they're being diffident and they're timid in a way to come before God. Diffidence always leads to despair in this case. And diffidence is the one who's telling despair what to do. Did you notice that? Despair is not too smart. It's diffidence that is always instigating the problems. Because you're diffident, you're going to get beaten. Because of diffidence, you contemplate suicide. So diffidence is not being, how would you describe it in this case? I don't think I'm describing it very well.
Not being sure of yourself, not being sure of what you do.
Lacking confidence.
That's a great way to put it. Lacking confidence.
I found this modern version at home. I was looking around the other day and it has this lady's name as Gloom. It's not quite exactly what I think. It kind of gives you one aspect of her that she was...
Well, almost sounds like the translators watch too much Hee-Haw. Gloom, despair, and agony on me. Okay. So suicide is a major player in this drama. Why do you think that is? Suicide? We're Christians. We don't think about suicide that much. Why is Bunyan writing so much about suicide?
Well, you have gloom, despair, and agony on me. You think about it.
Where did Bunyan spend a good bit of time?
He's in prison.
In prison. And it wasn't like he had great communication with the outside world, great companionship while in prison. Sometimes he did, but there were times that he did not. Is it possible that Bunyan may have contemplated suicide at some point? Because of this, God has sent me here. He must be punishing me for something. He must have... Maybe Bunyan's despairing at different points.
I think a lot of the characteristics of the sin problems that Christian had probably Bunyan's. That hits the main character.
I agree with you. I think that if this is any way autobiographical, Bunyan is Christian, and his companions are other people, hopeful, faithful, are other Christians that he traveled with, that he was in covenant with. So, but does he give in to suicide? Christian wants to. He wants to badly. Hopeful is the one who's being strong now. Mm-hmm. And this is maybe where he gets his name, Hopeful. Don't give up. Hopeful is not going to despair.
And Hopeful reminds him of his previous battles that he did win.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Okay, so they escape. How did they escape? Time is escaping from us. What did he find on him? He forgot that he had. The key of promise that unlocked all the doors in Doubting Castle. It unlocked three different doors. The last door was kind of stubborn and it took a while to open, but the key of promise opened all the doors. And then he escaped. And why didn't the giant catch them? He was aroused by the sound, the squeaking of that last door opening. But he didn't catch them then at that point. Why?
He had some type of seizure or spell.
Yes, he had. Whenever it was almost vampiric. He was allergic to sunlight. It was like. Oh, by the way, what day did the pilgrims escape? Do you remember? It's significant. Escaped on Sunday. So their escape from despair had a lot to do with what we're doing here today. The Delectable Mountains. Who are the shepherds? Who are the four shepherds? Okay, since we're running out of time, I'll tell you who the four shepherds are. Watchful, sincere. Right, watchful, sincere, experience, and knowledge. And, you might think it's a top typo, but who are the four shepherds? In other words, what do they represent?
Growth and maturity.
That could be one thing. I think they represent attributes of good pastors. And they are going to show the pilgrims lots of things, like a good pastor will. So these are attributes of good pastors. The shepherds are initially circumspect and ask the pilgrims several questions when they meet. Why do you think this is? That these are pastors, and this the Delectable Mountains, by the way, which more or less represents the church. They're getting into a new church at this point. Why are these shepherds asking them questions?
To determine the veracity of their profession.
They're not just going to let anybody in or give aid to just anyone. This happened before. Where was the other place that represented the church? Remember? The Palace Beautiful? Yes. Palace Beautiful. And who was the first lady of...
Was it Discretion?
Discretion. Discretion was the one who asked Christian all those questions. Again, because they didn't give their services to just anyone. Or maybe it decided what kind of services that they would render. So they visit the Hill of Error, and Christian asks, what does this mean? What does this mean? What is the Hill of Error? Someone want to look up 2 Timothy 2, 16 through 18, real quick? I'll see if I beat you to it, but I probably won't. It's a new Bible. And I don't know where anything is.
Yeah. 2 Timothy 2, 16 to 18?
Yes.
But avoid worldly and empty chatter, or it will lead... further ungodliness, and their talk will spread like gangrene, Among them are Hymenaeus and Philetus, men who have gone astray from the truth, saying that the resurrection has already taken place, and thus they have set the faith of some. Nevertheless, the firm... Well, for that, I guess it's hard.
Yeah. So, when Christian and Hopeful look over the edge of the hill of error, what do they see? They see the bodies of two people, Hymenaeus and Philetus, left there as an example of what happens to you if you fall into error, fall into heresy in this case. Mount Caution. Again, these are the shepherds showing them the sights of the Delectable Mountains. The Delectable Mountains include some really interesting places. The Hill of Error, Mount Caution, and the Byway to Hell. That's in the Delectable Mountains. But anyway, what is Mount Caution? What did they show them from Mount Caution? See the blind people stumbling around in the graveyard among the tombs? Remember who those people are? Who are those? Yep. Their eyes were taken by giant despair, and now they wander among the tombs, representing their own death, their dead men walking. And I thought it was interesting when one of the shepherds asked Christian, "Did you see a stile on your way here?" And Christian just says, "Yes." No elaboration, just, yep, saw that. But they did, I think later they had tears in their eyes from remembering how they could have easily been one of those people down there at the bottom of Mount Caution. And the Byway to Hell, what is the Byway to Hell doing here in the Delectable Mountains, so far along the path to the Celestial City? Does that mean we can lose our salvation? Is that what that's for? Is that why that's here? No, no, absolutely not.
He says it's there as a way that hypocrites go in, such as, I lost my spot, namely such as sell their birthright to Esau, such as sell their master to Judas. People who've been connected with the church.
Right, they've given evidence that they were on a pilgrimage. They looked like they were on a pilgrimage, but really they were just headed for that, to that byway to hell. And then finally, Clear Hill. This is finally a nice sight. Why aren't the pilgrims able to see the Celestial City clearly through the perspective glass, or telescope, or spyglass, or whatever you want to call it? Why aren't they able to see very clearly?
They're still trembling from what they saw before.
Yeah. They've seen the Byway to Hell, Mount Caution, the Hill of Error. Their hands a little shaky. They're trying to look through that thing. Also, it's kind of blurry. Why might it be blurry? What is 1 Corinthians 13:12? Right. We're seeing
still
through the...
struggling with sin.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And the part, we just aren't going to have enough time to go through little faith. And the parting words of wisdom were that one of the shepherds gave them a note or map of the right way to go. One said, "Beware of the flatterer." Another said, "Don't sleep on the enchanted ground." And the last one said, "Godspeed." They have a quick introduction to ignorance. Ignorance has a really big part further on in the story, but this is just an introduction. The guy basically thinks he's good enough to go to heaven. You go to heaven by good deeds, not through grace, but it's of his own works. I'm sorry I didn't get to go through all this, little faith, and how they see a man who is taken by seven demons, he's going back on the pathway, back to the byway to hell. They're taking him straight there. His name is apostate, or his name is Turnaway, and he's from the town apostate, or apostasy. What's apostasy mean? In case there are people here who don't understand big theological words. You turned away from the faith, basically. He's assaulted. Then that reminds Christian of the story of Little Faith, how he is assaulted by these three brothers. Faint heart, mistrust, and guilt. But although that is brought to mind by Christian, by seeing Turnaway, how's Little Faith different from Turnaway? Little Faith has some faith. He is on his way to the celestial city. He's not going to be taken to the byway of hell, byway to hell. But Little Faith loses his spending money. What does that mean? What do you think that means, real quick? He's robbed of his spending money by, think about who robbed him. Who did rob him? Faint heart, mistrust, and guilt. Spending money was maybe what he was supposed to use here in this life for the to build up the church. His talents, that which he was responsible for using here on earth. And then they compare Little Faith to Esau. Hopeful says, well, how come Little Faith, they said he didn't steal his jewels. His jewels were in his chest pocket. He didn't lose those. How come he didn't pawn some of his jewels so he could have some money to spread around? And I love this quote here. The Christian says, you're like a newborn chicken with some shell stuck on his head. Saying he's young in the faith. That's kind of funny that a Christian says this so soon after Castle Despair, and where their roles were more or less reversed. And he does eventually apologize for being so brusque with Hopeful. But Esau, he says that Esau's jewels weren't the same thing that he sold. He sold his birthright. The jewels in this case are his treasure in heaven, and no one can steal that away. Then they go into this little, or Hopeful goes into this little fantasy saying, oh man, I wish Great Grace had been there whenever Little Faith had been assaulted. He would have taken care of him. And they get into a discussion about, well, is spiritual warfare really something to be desired? Is that something you want to get into? Do you want to get into a battle? It's better to desire peace and be ready if the battle comes, but don't desire that. Don't long for this spiritual warfare. It's much better, don't desire to meet the enemy, but be prepared. It's good to be with others if you are assaulted. He may not have been assaulted quite so quickly or easily if he had been traveling in a Christian convoy, so to speak, and prefer peace. And I'm sorry we had to rush through that last part so quickly, but next week Cordy will be back, and I'm not sure exactly I know he's planning on picking up here after Little Faith and Mistrust, but I'm not sure exactly how far he's planning to go, so I would read about 30 pages ahead, maybe to 155, 160, and that should probably cover it. Brad, would you mind closing us in prayer today?
Lord, we thank you for this time. Pray, Lord, that you've been so news that we have is will or strength is righteousness and his appreciation for us. Pray the Lord. Be well pleased with the worship of God. Going upon the word, above all, we see Jesus. Rejoice together, worshiping his holy name, but also his Son, as we partake of the blood, flesh.